Coming up, Travis and I break down some of the stats behind some of the young stars that are breaking out right now in MLB and some of the young players who are struggling to keep up with expectations. We try to figure out how concerned Astro fans should be about the start of their season. And with all these pitcher injuries, who do you think is the best healthy pitcher in the world right now? Find out our opinion coming up right now. Hello, listeners. My name is Alex Jonitz, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Travis Miller. I am more of a stats nerd. He was a total stud on his D3 college team. This is the Two Tools Baseball Podcast. Enjoy.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the Two Tools Baseball Podcast, episode 126. Alex and I are coming to you live. It is Monday, April 29th. AJ, rounding out the month of baseball is pretty much already concluded. We've seen a lot of interesting things happen, but I'll start off the episode today as I usually do with just, you know, randomness and maybe not baseball related questions, but what are the Atlanta Falcons doing?
Oh yeah, Travis, we both enjoyed the NFL draft last week. We both started yelling on my couch when that pick was announced because all of a sudden Schefter was saying they might go quarterback and we're like, well, that's only Penix or McCarthy. It just seems so weird. And they went ahead and got Penix. But Travis, I personally just don't understand at all. I understand that some people think that, you know, the way that the Green Bay Packers went and got Jordan Love while they already had Rodgers in his prime, it's kind of like that, right? No, it's really not like that at all, because because the Packers were in a situation, Travis, where they had...
They just didn't sign a brand new quarterback to 4 years and $100 million-plus dollars guaranteed.
Yeah, right? Maybe there was more of a question mark with Rodgers if he wasn't extending a contract. But then the other thing is, Jordan Love was 21, and Penix, I believe, is like 24. He's going to be 24 correct. In a month. Yep. So it's like, you're not signing the same guy. Love was like a high upside, like just kind of a guy who can observe from Rodgers. Penix is like the guy who we already know he has the arm talent and the ability to make some plays, but we don't know how good he can really be at the NFL level. So it's like, this is the guy who you feel like you throw him out there and you see what you got. Not you sit there and let him watch for a couple years because he's gonna be 26 or 27. Like,
yeah, yeah. In 28 might be a 28-year-old starter first year in the league. Yeah, right.
But then other people are saying that the one thing that does make a little bit of sense is the fact that Cousins will be starting the year, or he's currently rehabbing from, was it Achilles or?
Yeah, Achilles or calf.
So with that being said, maybe he needs some time at the beginning of the season to ramp up. Still isn't fully 100%. So you give Penix, you know, those weapons and you hope he can get you a win or two. That being said, Travis, if that was your plan, just go sign a backup quarterback and use your eighth pick.
Gardner Minshew would have looked great for a season, right?
And then use your eighth pick on someone who's, you know, going to be a long-term upside guy on either defense or, you know, O-line or whatever it might be. But Travis, good little side note there, because that left us scratching our heads. Travis, there's a lot of things leaving us scratching our heads. Good transition by me. Thank you. In the baseball world, I have a few things written down here that we'll go over. Not a ton of big picture topics today, but some interesting kind of small subplots of the season so far that I thought are interesting. And Travis, you and I will just sit here before the episode. We'll look through Baseball Reference, Fangraphs. We'll find interesting tidbits that we might want to sprinkle in the episode. And it's just so funny how pretty much every episode, one of us will find something before the episode. Like, you just told me something about Austin Riley's offense right now, slugging below 400. Like, I didn't know that. It's just funny seeing people who follow the sport very closely. It's hard. You're going to miss these little things throughout the league. So that's why I think it's fun to highlight some of these small topics and just kind of go around the league, around different teams, and say, hey, what do we think about this or that? So Travis, we'll start here. We'll start with a fun little game of our no home run watch. So this is just a fun thing I thought of right before we started. And basically there are still a handful of players who are qualified, like they're playing, you know, nearly every game, or at least most games. All these guys have like 23 plus games played and they still have no home runs. So I saw someone make a tweet about this a little while ago, and they were tracking the no home run watch, and they had guys like Neto on it who'd recently homered, Javi Baez who homered. I think they had Arenado who homered and Castellanos who homered. So the list is kind of narrowing down. There's like 15 qualified hitters right now with no homers. And of those guys, there's some notable guys who you think would have homered by now but have not. So I'm going to read off some names, Travis, and then we're going to say who is next to homer and who do we think is going to be on this list the longest, because maybe we think that their slump is a real problem. So one of the most surprising names to me, Travis, is Gleyber Torres. I think that when I think of Gleyber, he should be pretty much in his prime right now. I think he's been an underrated hitter the last couple of years. He definitely, if nothing else, when you think of him as a Midland fielder, you think of him as having power in the bat.
Yeah, 30 home runs, exactly.
And currently, we're talking about zero home runs in 29 games played. The walk and strikeout numbers, nothing alarming there. The batting average and on base are both low. The slugging percentage is very low. So he's not having a good offensive year at all, I would say. So the lack of home run stuff is likely has something to do with just overall at the plate. He's not making good contact with the ball at the moment. You know, it's still very early in the season. So he's someone that stood out to me. Tim Anderson also has zero home runs. He kind of stopped being a home run type of hitter the last couple seasons. Maybe back in his peak, he could, you know, hit, you know, 10, 20 homers, but not so much anymore. He's at zero still. Joey Meneses, who broke out a couple years ago for the Nationals, he's still at zero home runs. He's having a weak offensive year to start the season. Alex Bregman, Travis, zero home runs. And his walk rate and strikeout rate are good as always. He's not very striking out very much. He's walking a good amount. But yeah, only in 25 games played, just 7 RBIs, 4 runs, 0 homers. Very odd kind of spot in that Astros batting order. And his batting average, on base, and slugging are all below 300. So just not the start of the season he wants at all. Luis Arraez with zero. That's maybe not as surprising because he hits for contact primarily. But he always gets some out.
Correct,
Still at zero. Andrés Giménez, he is not hitting the ball poorly, I'd say. He's got 275 average, 345 on base, 343 slugging, just no pop in the bat at the moment. Nico Horner, also not hitting the ball poorly at all, but zero homers for him. Andrew Vaughn, Travis, in my mind, maybe one of the more disappointing, I guess, young offensively minded prospects in recent years.
I think he was a top 10 in like 2020 or 2021, Alex. Yeah.
I really thought he was going to, at some point, just kind of click and be a really special hitter. Maybe they were going to have him in like left field, first base, DH. Didn't really know or care. I just thought, you know, his bat is going to earn him a spot at the big league level. The last three seasons, his walk rate hasn't gotten that much better, and he strikes out a lot more than the years past. And the average three straight years has gone down. The last 3 years, slugging is going down. Overall, the offense is really poor this year, batting 167, a 243 on base, and a 208 slugging. He has zero homers for a team that just needs something to go right for them.
Absolutely.
And he's not able to get it going. A couple more notable guys, Spencer Torkelson. He is someone who is known for having a power bat, or at least as a prospect having a power bat. Still trying to find his power stroke this season. Not a great start to the year for him. All average on base slugging below 300. And then Mason Wynn is someone else who has been getting a lot of big league time for the Cardinals as a shortstop. And the offense for him is actually quite good overall. 297 average, 372 on base, 405 slugging. So he's been a well above average hitter, but no home runs. And that's kind of interesting because his profile coming up wasn't like a slap hitter by any means, even though he's hitting for better average and for not much power at all. If I look at some of his, you know, Statcast stats, he's been able to have a max exit velocity like 108. So it's not like he has no pop whatsoever. He has 17 hard hit balls this season, but none of them have been able to leave the yard. So Travis, all that being said, I threw a handful of names out there. Who's the most surprising to be on that list?
Yeah, one thing I will say before I say my name or a duo of names, but you know, at least with Mason Wynn, I'll say is he is the only guy I looked up that I think right now has a WAR that's above one. He's got a 1.1 baseball reference WAR. like you said, batting average is at 311, on base at 384. So OPS is actually above 800. So you're looking at it and you're still saying he can get away with not hitting home runs and still be a pretty productive hitter. So yes, that's kind of the good thing right there. But I think, you know, I would say two names that you said, Alex, Gleyber Torres, Alex Bregman, these guys, 2019, were absolutely mashing the baseball. We were looking at them as, wow, the 20s are going to be these guys' decades. They may even control the spot at their positions. Gleyber was playing a lot of second base and shortstop. Alex Bregman was playing third base. We really thought that these guys could be top three at their positions. Look out. They're young. They're exciting. They've had big moments already in the postseason. But it's absolutely shocking that these guys have not had a ball leave the ballpark. Exit velo has gone down, and we're seeing just a startling start for both of them. And one thing that's really really shocking to me as well, Alex, is both these guys are on contract years. I mean, we thought Bregman, I think a couple of years ago, people were talking about, you know, will he get, you know, Arenado money? Will he get a typical young third baseman type of contract where he'll get 120 to, you know, 190 or even $200 million for 5 years? You know, something that Correa was asking for when he was trying to re-sign and extend his deal with the Astros. I think it was like 5 years, $160 million the Astros were giving him, and he was going off that one season. But he went over to Minnesota. But I mean, right now, I wonder what the Astros are thinking, if they even want to touch and re-sign him, or if they're just going to let him walk if these numbers continue. And then Gleyber as well. I'll say for both guys, you'd think with those ballparks, you'd have a lot of home runs. I mean, in Houston, you have that, which seems illegal, left field porch that right-handed hitters should be able to hit 30 home runs out of, especially when that's your home ballpark. And then Gleyber playing at Yankee Stadium, most guys that are power hitters are going to easily crack 30 home runs a season out of there as well. So it's concerning for me for both those guys. Everyone else, Tim Anderson, Nico Horner, some of the other smaller, maybe middle infield guys, not too concerned about. I don't mind if they want to go more towards like an average approach. Luis Arraez, like you mentioned too, I'm not too shocked there if they want to go again more towards an average approach and not really focus on the power. But for guys like Gleyber and Bregman that are typically known for, you know, keeping up in the power numbers, seeing them at zero and we're almost in the month of May is very surprising to me. And you hope that they can turn it around. But that's kind of the two guys that really stood out for me. Of course, Spencer Torkelson, what we saw in the minors was, I think we all expected 40 home runs a rookie year. I think we all thought he was going to be like a Pete Alonso. He really has not lived up to what he was at least projected to be. Same thing like you mentioned about Andrew Vaughn. Both guys Vaughn was third in a third overall pick, and Spencer Torkelson, I believe, was first overall in his draft. So both guys were top three draft picks when they were drafted out of high school or college. And yeah, both guys, you're kind of hoping and wondering what is it going to take to get these guys to kind of turn it around. But that's kind of where I'll leave it right there. For me, Bregman and Gleyber, that's the biggest surprise, just because they've been in the league for 5+ years and they're on contract years.
Yeah, Travis, you highlighted probably the two like highest profile guys you'd expect to have the power. I completely agree with Gleyber and Bregman being the most surprising names. You mentioned Torkelson as well. I'll give him a quick deep dive looking at some of his numbers under the hood. He has just, for whatever reason, I'm not going to act like I know what's wrong with the swing or anything, but the under the hood numbers are quite disappointing. Taking a look at how he's changed year to year, looking from 2022, his rookie year, to his second year, he went up in exit velocity, average exit velocity, from 90 to 91. This year, down to 88. His max exit velocity rookie year to sophomore year went 111 to 112, and then this year down to 108. His launch angle is up a bit, which is a good thing, but the lack of exit velocity is preventing him from hitting too many barrels. He has only 2 barrels this season after having 62 last year and 22 as a rookie. Obviously, a lot more time to get that number up, but his barrel percentage is at only 2.5 right now, which is really poor compared to 14 last year, which even was up from his rookie year. So he showed a good sign of growth in my mind from his rookie year to his second year. And then this year in 2024, hard hit rate is down, barrel rate is down. The shocking thing here is this as well. 214 batting average for him. His expected batting average, according to StatCast, is actually lower than that. His slugging is at 291. His expected slugging is actually 279, according to StatCast. Yeah. So there's just not enough quality contact going on with his plate approach at the moment. I don't want to kind of hypothesize as to why that might be. One thing that's not the problem is he's not swinging and missing too much. He's not chasing bad pitches too much. His strikeout rate and his walk rates are both around league average. His average exit velocity is just below league average, but the barrels are not there. The quality contact's not there, and even the contact's not there. So it's not like you mentioned guys like Nico Horner, Luis Arraez. They kind of sell out that power for more base hits. He's not even getting that. So it's a concern, of course, for Torkelson's start to the year. Hopefully time will fix those wounds. But, I mean, compared to last year, where he wasn't like a superstar last year, but he had a really good stretch at some points of the season. So far this year has not been able to get that stride whatsoever. So, I thought these guys were fun guys to highlight. Don't want to bash on them, but just kind of, but it's something that people miss. I feel like if, you know, we see all the, you know, if you follow a lot of MLB accounts on Twitter or Instagram, you see, oh, this guy hit a home run today. Oh, this guy did that. But how about the lowlights, the guys that are not putting up the highlights? Want to give them a quick little examination. But Travis, let's keep it rolling here. I'll highlight another player who I am a bit surprised at their numbers. And this is going to be another guy who I think is having a worse season than most people expected. Worse last couple seasons than people were probably hoping. That's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Travis, Vladdy Jr., we both know very well. We started this podcast covering his 2021 season, basically. It was a big race for MVP between him and Shohei Ohtani. That was a insane breakout season for an offensive, young, promising, rising star. And ever since then, I'm not quite sure what the big problem has been. I'm looking at his numbers to try to figure it out. But just to give you guys the surface level numbers first, right now he's hitting 218 batting average, 323 on base percentage, 336 slugging. That's good for a 98 WRC plus. So he's right around a league average hitter by all metrics. That's not what you want out of a young star, especially one that's playing first base. That's not giving you good defense or base running. You're really hoping that he sets the tone with his power. Looking at some of the other numbers he has going on, he's having a career high in strikeout percentage. It's 21%. It's not too alarming. You know, if you're up at 30%, I would say, you know, this is something you need to address. The walk percentage is actually at a career high too, but it's not by much. It's a bit of an uptick from last year. But yeah, like we said, the contact is down. The on-base percentage is down. The slugging is down. And to try to figure out why, you can look at some of his kind of other under the hood stats that we have going on StatCast. His max exit velocity, pretty much the same as seasons past, 117. He's still able to crush the ball. His that's his max EV. His average EV, about the same as the last couple years as well. So no major concern there. His barrel rate is down a touch. His hard hit rate is about the same or a little bit higher. So I think overall, look at his expected stats. You expect him, you know, he'll come around a little bit. It's not like he's going to be this average hitter for the full season. He's going to, at some point, start hitting the ball where they ain't, into the gaps, over the fence, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's still this trend, Travis, of, you know, looking back at 2021, we saw a guy who was worth over 6 WAR according to Fangraphs. The next year, only 3 WAR. The next year, not even 2 WAR, and now he's at 0.1 to start the season. So it's just this downward trend that I think no one was really expecting and no one's really hoping for. And one thing he's had a problem with throughout his career is, I believe, ground ball rate. The season where he hits the fewest ground balls was that 2021 season. He put the ball in the air more, and that led to more power numbers. He has not been able to do that since. And this season, he is actually up at hitting over half of his balls are on the ground. So not easy to have a high slugging percentage when you're not a fast player and you're hitting all your balls on the ground. Even if you hit it hard, you're not going to be able to get extra bases. So what is your biggest kind of, what's your thought on where Guerrero Jr. is at right now? Because I think going back a couple years ago, we would have said, hey, what's the short list of guys who might be the best hitter in baseball someday? He'd be on that list. And right now, no one's really thinking of him in that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, truly, it's even the stats that you pointed out, some of those advanced stats, it really is not not too much of a telling sign that it's truly declined. You know, he still has some of the numbers that are remaining consistent, where you just got to scratch your head and wonder, you know, what's bothering him, or what's bringing, you know, a level of uncomfort at the plate. And only 3 home runs through the month of April. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's not great. And then again, you look at all the percentage stats that I'm looking at too, just a massive drop off. And it's funny, Alex. I mean, 2021, we raved about it. We said, it, you know, if it wasn't for Ohtani, he was an easy slam dunk. He was going to win the American League MVP. So many guys, I think like Pedro Martinez and so many other analysts were saying, oh, he is the MVP. You know, there's that funny quote that I think they said Ohtani doesn't hit or take BP. And, you know, Vladimir Guerrero does, which, again, just kind of doesn't make any sense. But he was the easy number two, Alex. That's what I'll say. And then 2022, we saw him, you know, still have a decent season. The numbers did dip a bit. You know, that's expected when you're young and you have a breakout season. I think everyone thinks, oh, you're going to keep this consistent, right? Well, not necessarily. Your numbers could dip a little bit, but he did win the Gold Glove in 2022. So then you kind of thought to yourself, man, he put the hitting together. He put the feeling together in the next season. And, you know, maybe this guy can really shoot up and, you know, we could be looking at a 5-6 war guy every single year. But right now, like you mentioned, 0.1 war to start the year, hitting's dipped. I don't really know what you got to do. I mean, I think it just kind of comes down to, you got to find a new approach. I've seen guys, you know, kind of change their batting stance, you know, maybe pick up a couple more hitting tips from the hitting coach and go with that. But again, some guys I tend to not be too worried about. And I know it's only been 29 games and he's played every single game so far this season. Vladdy would be a guy maybe I might evaluate sometime at the All-Star break or sometime in August. I'm not too worried about him right now, because there are a bunch of guys too that we could talk about that are not having the strongest starts to their 2024 campaign. But it is concerning the way you saw the trends, Alex. 2021, great season, OPS plus at 167. 2022, OPS plus at 133. 2023, OPS plus at 117. It's going down. It's below 100 right now. So that's the trend we see. He's got a kind of a nice Mount Everest OPS plus chart right now, where it built up from 2019 to 2021, hitting the peak, and now it's on a very slow, steady decline. And I think he can definitely pick it back up again. But again, it's one of those things where you gotta figure out and maybe pick up some more tricks or some more help from the hitting coach to figure this out. But yeah, something's got to be done, because I think we all know that the Toronto Blue Jays rely on their power and their offense to run through Vladdy, because he carried that team in 2021 and it had 48 home runs that year. So he's got to figure something out.
Yeah, we agree about him needing to kind of make some sort of change. That's the biggest thing for me, is that we know he has the tools. He hits the ball super hard, and he also has great contact. Even in the seasons where we saw this decline, you know, his MVP second place finish in 2021, he hit .311. The next year when he had the decline, he still hit .274. I was like, that's pretty good in today's game when batting average is at an all-time low. And the next year he hit .264, which is probably low for his standards, but still, it's not like he's hitting 200 or below. But now he's kind of dropped off the bottom. So we know he has the tools, the contact, the power, the ability to drive the ball. It just is not happening. So I wanted to kind of shed some light on him. It makes me think, you know, I hope that 2021 wasn't this outlier year that he can never hope to even come close to again. So we'll be monitoring him, of course. And like you said, we will take a look. All-Star break. We're not writing him off so early in the season, because he does have a track record of being an elite, like at least All-Star caliber MLB type player. So we'll take a closer look later on and kind of see if he's able to kind of right some wrongs here and kind of start turning the ship in a good direction. But Travis, another guy I want us to take a look at is having kind of the opposite effect, where I think that maybe people started to give up on him a bit as like an elite player, and he's sort of turning it on right now. And this is going to be Alec Bohm. Alec Bohm, you know, I just use the term elite player. I guess I want to kind of say it is still early in the season. These numbers are going to change a bit throughout the course of the season, but I think he deserves a lot of praise for how he started the year. By far the best offensive season on a rate basis that he's ever put together. like I said, these numbers are going to be going down surely, but he started the season right now with a .365 batting average, a .441 on base percentage, a .615 slugging. And another good thing that he has going for him is a career high walk percentage. While his strikeout percentage is about the same it was last year and year before. So he's not really selling out more strikeouts for more walks. He's getting better at seeing pitches while not swinging and missing more. So that's been a great development by him. Another thing worth looking at with him is the fact that the defense is not a negative so far, according to Fangraphs. It's been a negative the last two seasons, severely negative, in fact, but he already has surpassed his Fangraphs WAR from 2023 or 2022. He had a 1.4 in each of those seasons and has a 1.8 right now, according to Fangraphs. So Alec Bohm, Travis, he is someone who I think, you know, he's 27. This is age 27 season. We all knew he'd be, you know, he was an offense first prospect when he came up, and people kind of said, hey, can this guy, you know, put it together a really solid offensive campaign? And for a little time there, I think we weren't really sure if he's going to be able to do that. I think that it took us some time for us to say, first to finally say now that maybe he has arrived. If you look at his stats from last year to this year, he's made a big step forward with not chasing bad pitches. His average exit velocity is up, and he's overall just kind of developed as a hitter, hitting more barrels, more sweet spots, better expected stats, striking out a lot less. So Travis, any thoughts on Alec Bohm? He's one of these guys who the Phillies are probably banking on in order to kind of keep their run going. Harper, you expect some decline at some point. Castellanos not having a great year.
Castellanos is giving up.
But Bohm was picking up some slack. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all, most of the MLB community could probably say that, you know, 2021, 2022, you basically were just settling for Alec Bohm being a guy that's going to bat between, you know, he's going to probably hit 250 to 280. So somewhere in that 260 batting average range, not be a huge on base guy. Slugging percentage, if it's 400, that's great. But it's just funny that now it's just really the numbers have just all shot up. And of course they're going to come down, but at least it's nice to see the confidence there, and that that you can actually see little spurts of these type of hitting performances from Alec Bohm. He's a guy that I think a lot of people kind of had a lot of high hopes for coming into 2020. He was again one of the top prospects in MLB. He was a first rounder, third overall pick, actually drafted in 2018 out of Wichita State. So people did have really high hopes for him. Some people I think compared him to even being like a next Schmidt at third base for the Phillies, but obviously not going to happen. But there was the power aspect people I think were really banking on. But you know, this year, not showing that he's going to be a great, great power hitter, only 4 home runs. I think his career high is 20 home runs. So we kind of know at least now we're not going to see a power hitting Alec Bohm, at least from, you know, what we've seen in his career so far. But seeing some of these percentage stats get going, seeing that he's driving the ball into the gap, already 12 doubles on the season, that's exciting to see. And he's picking up the slack for some of the other Philly hitters that haven't gotten it going yet. And again, a good team. Alec Bohm, or the Phillies are a good team because Alec Bohm is a guy that can pick up the slack at certain times and certain months for others as they kind of struggle and maybe get started with the season, go through some of the first month struggles to kind of get back on track. But it's nice at least to see, at least you know, Phillies fans are lucky to see that one guy at least is carrying the slack and having a milestone type of April, and while other guys kind of still try to figure it out and get back on track. But yeah, truly surprising, Alex. I'll say that I did not know he had this in him. The on base truly is incredible, with being at a .441 and then slugging above 600. That's awesome to see. This is an Alec Bohm that I think Phillies fans, we're hoping and dreaming for one day, and that, you know, at least they get it now for the first month of April. And we'll see again how these numbers will finish off as the first half ends, and then as we get into August, September, how these numbers continue to go or to keep going. You only hope it doesn't it doesn't transition into like a Matt Chapman type of year, Alex, where great April, the numbers are off the charts, and then you go into August, September, and you're like, okay, this guy needs to be cut because these numbers are just dreadful now. And you know, we'll see what he finishes off at right now. But again, good start for him, and he's at least keeping that Phillies team afloat.
Another guy who's kind of in a similar class of prospect, I feel like a guy that kind of came up through the prospect rankings with Bohm, is Joe Adell. He is someone who is finally kind of putting it together offensively. Like we're saying, it's still very early. And even though it's very early for a guy like Bohm, it's even earlier for Adell because he was not really even an everyday choice to play outfield this season, but he sort of has earned that spot in the recent weeks. And he seems like he's kind of an everyday player as it currently stands with this current Angels team, especially in a more developmental year it seems they might be taking. Joe Adell, Travis, he is having a career start to a season at least. Looking at his stats, I think the thing that jumped out to me the most is a severe drop in strikeouts. Last season, I want to preface this by saying he doesn't get consistent play time. Like this season, he's at 21 games. Yeah. Last season was 17 games. Year before, 88 games with under 300 plate appearances that year. So none of these are complete seasons. But just looking at some of the percentages from these seasons, this year he's at a 23.5% strikeout percentage. Last year up at 40%. That's just way too high. Year before that, 37.5% strikeout percent is just way too high. He has seemingly kind of tamed that number and is managing avoiding strikeouts a bit more. And taking a look at some of his Statcast numbers to figure out why that might be, I think some of the correction with the strikeout rate comes down at least in part to being better at avoiding whiffs. This season, he's doing his best at avoiding whiffs. He's still not great at it, but less swinging and miss, swinging through the ball. I would still say it's a weakness of his plate approach. It's not one of his strengths in terms of, making contact and avoiding bad pitches. He still does chase balls out of the zone a decent amount. He's not walking a ton, but the quality of contact when he's hitting the ball is at his best for sure of his career. His hard hit rate is off the charts. His barrel rate is easily the best of his career. And the average exit velocity is a step up from last year as well. Overall, I think that Adell has definitely found something, at least in part. Obviously, MLB pitchers might start making some counter adjustments. But looking at Adell's stats, I'm pleasantly surprised. His average exit velocity isn't even that high, but he's able to work in hard hits during times when it's time to get a hard hit. So he's not like, I think, I'm not 100% sure. I need to do some more research, but I think that when there's two strikes, he's probably not swinging as hard, trying to avoid those strikeouts. But when he's in a hitter's count, he's letting it rip, and that's leading to a hard hit rate over 50% of his balls in play are hard hits right now, which is awesome. Career high barrel rate. So a lot going right for Joe Adell at the moment, Travis. And his expected numbers are off the charts. His expected slugging is actually higher than his current slugging. Same for his expected batting average. So give me your thoughts on Adell's start to the season. There's been some jokes even that we've made about about some of the base running.
Yeah.
There's been defensive blunders in his past seasons. But right now, I'm glad to see that he's kind of figured something out in making himself a better baseball player, which is at the plate.
Yeah, a lot of Angel fans, I think, including me, kind of have a soft spot for Joe Adell just because he was – he was selected with, I think it was like the 10th pick in that 2016 draft. It was one of our first round draft picks in a while. That really meant something with the upside out of high school. And everything, everyone thought, oh my God, like this guy will be the next Mike Trout because we drafted an outfielder out of high school. He's going to be a special player. Really struggled to get playing time to succeed. 2020 was abysmal, Alex. I was questioning the entire Angels scouting and just asking myself, what did you guys see in this guy? The hitting has been awful. The defense was surprisingly the worst thing about it. That was a huge concern, but it's nice to see that, with some playing time and hopefully again, he'll consistently get more playing time. We're kind of seeing a breakout season of Joe Adell. He already has 55 plate appearances this year, Alex. He's almost at the total amount that he had last year. He only had 62 plate appearances last year. He did have a freak injury at Dodger Stadium that kind of sidelined him, I think, for the rest of the season. And we just didn't really know why. I think it was a oblique injury, Alex. That was the fun injury of last year for some reason for the Angels. But last year, what number is nice to see is he had 62 plate appearances last year. And out of the 62, 25 were strikeouts. This year, 55 plate appearances, 13 strikeouts. So he basically has cut his strikeouts in half with this season. The walks right now are still pretty much on par for what he did last year. He is not a big, big walker, but he is, of course, bringing the offense as well, hitting doubles, hitting triples, hitting home runs. You know, the base running is kind of some things you'd like to, you know, you like to see him work on. I can kind of live with some of those errors. You know, we've seen the offense just really pick it up the last couple of weeks, and that's nice to see. And I guess for me moving forward, I just want to see him get more playing time. You know, I want to see Angels say to the front office, I want to see the coaches say, or, you know, at least see a vision with the organization and say, let's get our young guys some rest, because we're going to be counting on these guys for, you know, the foreseeable future right now. And Joe Adell, I think right now, is one of those guys. I mean, we talked about it last week in our last episode when we were making our 15 guys we'd save on an expansion draft. And Joe Adell is one guy we both agree on, Alex, because I think the upside is there. He still is very young. He's still 25. And I think we still can see some big seasons out of Joe Adell. You know, I'm confident we could still see a season of, you know, 35. I think we could even see a 40 home run season out of Joe Adell. I think the power and all that is all there. You know, I think he still has some things to work on, but I'm very shocked, and not shocked, but I'm very surprised that we've seen the numbers that we're seeing right now, Alex, with almost a 600 slug. The average is way up. I thought Joe Adell was going to be living at a 220 batting average for his entire career, almost like a Joey Gallo kind of type player. But having a batting average at 327 so far is definitely very shocking. But a nice way to be shocking. But yeah, I truly am happy for the guy, and I wish that he continues his success, because I think I mentioned every Angels fan does have a soft spot for Joe Adell to succeed.
Another player, Travis, another young player that I want to kind of highlight here. This is someone who I think by everyone's estimation was going to break out. And last year he did break out. That's Gunnar Henderson. Last year, a great season for him as a young player on a young team that had high, you know, they adopted a winning sort of, I guess just a winning trend amongst them, a team full of young players who I think had, you know, high expectations individually, but no one thought the team would be so successful, and they put it together last year. But Travis, for me, this season, somehow it just looks much better for Gunnar. He is in his age 23 year, but he started the year so far with average on base and slugging, all a substantial step higher than what he was at last year. He's currently hitting a 288 average, a 347 on base, and a 613 slugging. I mean, it's almost like an MVP-ish caliber, a slash line. Obviously, a lot of time here, but a lot of time for things to change. But his offense is in a great spot right now, and he's playing good defense at the shortstop position, which I think, Travis, when you start thinking about that level of offense, playing shortstop at a good level, also stealing bases and having positive value on the base paths, I think we're talking about a mini superstar here. And I think a lot of people thought Gunnar would be very, very good, a good MLB player, but I'm not sure this level was expected, you know? I mean, I don't know if I'm fair in saying that, because he was at one point the number one prospect in baseball. But I feel like the scouting reports, I mean, maybe I was reading them wrong, but I didn't really see this level of offense coming from him, as well as the full package, being able to play shortstop at this level. So I am very pleasantly surprised with what he's been doing last couple seasons compared to this year. He is up on average exit velocity. He's about the same in max exit velocity. Career high launch angle, career high barrel percent, career high hard hit percent. So he's just hitting the ball better than ever before to start the season. And with that being said, Travis, I am wondering a question for us to kind of figure out. Where does he rank among shortstops in baseball? And obviously it's too early. I don't want to overreact too much, but I just think about how this position has changed in recent years, Travis, because I feel like maybe two seasons ago, three seasons ago, it was so hard. There was like top six shortstops in the league, like Lindor. You had
Trey Turner, Correa, Bogarts. It was stacked.
And we've had some changes. Bogarts now plays second base. Lindor started the year pretty slow. Tatis moved to the outfield.
Baez doesn't play baseball.
Baez is up there swinging.
Wander Franco is not in the league.
Yes.
it's a lot of crazy turns.
Well said. And with
that might be the one position, Alex, I think 2 years ago, it just flip-flopped.
We had a complete, I wouldn't say we had it wrong, but it's just like everyone didn't really see the level of turnover at the position. There are still guys who are relevant, of course, and most of the guys we listed are still really good players. You know, I think Lindor is still a good player. He just had a slow start to the year. I think that Tatis is still a phenomenal player. He just plays a different position now. Seager is still doing Seager things. But, Travis, I think that Gunnar has vaulted himself towards the top of this sort of short list of guys at the spot. Where do you think he might land? And I think, do you think by the end of the year in the offseason, could we be having him as shortstop number one going into the following season?
Yeah, without a doubt, it's he's a top 10. And right now, again, I have to do a deep dive. I'd have to look at numbers and check him out. But I think right now it's safe to say you probably can see him as a top five right now, Alex, because the numbers do speak for themselves. I do want to give Gunnar Henderson props, because the day that I dropped him in fantasy last year is basically the day that he just started clicking. And I've regretted that decision for the last year so far. I think it was like late or middle June. I said, I guess it's not, he's not going to be the guy. He punished me for that one right there. But yeah. And what's nice, you said, mentioned too, is that, you know, he is this type, we didn't expect him to be this type of guy, but with this Orioles team, it's so fun to say and see that he doesn't even have to be this type of guy. They're already a good baseball team. They already have a top five catcher. They already have, you know, one of the best prospects. Yeah, he had a very slow start, but Jackson Holliday, who should be very fun to watch in the near future. Jordan Westberg is a great third baseman. Colton Cowser has been an outstanding left fielder. He's got a 199 OPS plus. He's been very fun to watch. And then, of course, you know, it's funny, you forget about the old timers, Cedric Mullins, Anthony Santander, because these guys have been there for, it feels like, 5 to 6 years now. And they were there during the days of winning 60 games or 70 games. And they seem like the old guys on the club. And they're not even 30 years old, Alex. They're 29 years old. But it feels like we've been seeing them for so many years now. And even Austin Hayes is 28. And we feel like these guys are the old guys. But so many young guys are carrying this team. And that's the fun part. Gunnar Henderson is still the best player, one of the best hitters on the team, and he doesn't even have to be that guy. There's so many guys to carry around the lineup. That's what truly makes one of these offenses to be top, one of the top offenses in baseball, like the Atlanta Braves, like the Texas Rangers that we've seen for years on end. But yeah, it's crazy to see what he's done, and like you mentioned, I think it's easy to say he's a top five shortstop right now, and we could easily be seeing him be number one at the end of the year with the potential he's got. I'll say this, with his age, I think he'd be the number one shortstop I'd want to take right now if I could easily snatch one guy at the shortstop position in the league. I think he has so much upside, and it's so fun to watch him. So good highlight to cover him.
Yeah, and then I don't want to just jump the gun and say he's like the best shortstop in baseball right this second, but I think, you know, if he outperforms Seager, if you look at just the age, the trajectory, I think we're looking at someone who might be at the top of the list going in the next season if he keeps up what he's doing right now. And of course, like we keep saying, it is early, but he has had a special start to the year. Travis, another fun trend I was kind of monitoring and wanted to bring up with you is this. We know how many pitcher injuries there are in baseball right now. We know that a lot of guys are on the IL. Some guys are, you know, IL 60 in surgery, see you next year type of type of situation. Some of these guys are rehabbing in the minors and what have you. But I kind of wanted to do this. I kind of wanted to say, not for just the start of this season, but just for in terms of your ranking. If you had to rank who is the best pitcher, but ignore everyone who's currently injured. You have to ignore Strider. You have to ignore DeGrom. Mm-hmm. All these types of guys. It's interesting to me how narrow the options are, in my opinion. I think, you know, when everyone's healthy, you can have these really interesting arguments with, you know, DeGrom. It's like, oh, DeGrom's healthy, he's just the guy.
Yeah.
And then what we saw Strider doing was special. But, you know, Verlander just coming back from injury and Scherzer in wait. And, you know, I think just looking at the names that are actually sort of in consideration, it's a bit surprising, and it makes for a fun little conversation. So some of the candidates who I see here for who might be the best pitcher in the world, if you had to put it that way, One candidate I think would have to be Zach Wheeler. He has a 1.93 ERA. Some good advanced numbers as well. He's always striking out a ton of guys, so he has that going for him. So he's had a good start to the year, and he has had a good past few seasons. So he has that built-up track record. Tarek Skubal, Travis, he has an insane ERA right now. I don't think anyone would have really had him in this conversation last year, but he has so much positive momentum. He's striking out a ton of guys. He's walking fewer guys than Wheeler. So there's things to like about what Skubal's doing. Looking at other guys who might be in contention, Tyler Glasnow's had a great start to the year, but it was hurt so much recently, it's kind of hard to give him the crown, but he's healthy now, so we can't fault him for that. He has to be one of the names mentioned. Looking at other guys, Travis, I think that a guy that needs to be thrown out there is Logan Webb, because he has been pretty consistent the last few seasons, getting Cy Young votes and starting the year strong with the 2.33 ERA out the gate so far. A low strikeout rate for him, actually, but limiting the walks and limiting the hard contact, keeping balls in play on the ground, which has been a key for him. And playing in that pitcher's ballpark is going to help him a bit, too. Travis, are any of these names sticking for you? Do you think we have said the guy? I mean, Corbin Burnes, Travis, a 2.55 ERA. Not striking out guys maybe like he used to in his prime, but still putting up a good ERA, of course, on a good team. And he is someone who has had the track record of being a dominant pitcher in recent years. So where are you landing in this conversation?
Yeah. And you mentioned guys that are healthy, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Cause if you kind of said, you know, if you basically were saying anybody, you know, it could be someone that's on the IL, someone that's active right now. I think right now I'm still leaning probably towards that Spencer Strider. I think when he's healthy, he is one of the most dominant pitchers in the game. Obviously, for I think we had a discussion a year and a half ago, and we were talking about, you know, who is the best starting pitcher right now in the game. Obviously, Gerrit Cole came to mind. But
you know, I didn't mention his name.
You know, for me, I've always been sticking with, since at least this decade, and you know, it's probably since 2021 when he won the Cy Young, but Corbin Burnes has always been, for me, just kind of a true consistent starting pitcher. You know what you're gonna get from him. There's really nothing too shocking that's gonna happen from him. And again, this year, some numbers are down, but again, ERA is still at a 2.55. That's pretty much on par for what he does and what he delivers. You know, new guys, Alex, like you mentioned, Tarek Skubal, we talked about him a year or two ago, and we kind of said, you know, have your eye out on him, and he has naturally just gotten better and better. I think was it like a year or two ago that the Tigers were saying that, like, we might trade anybody? If anybody makes an appealing offer, we might just trade him.
I think they might have had that quote.
And I think we were discussing that because we were like, you have so many young guys. Why would you get rid of like all these aces? And Tarek Skubal, I think his name came up, and it's like, why wouldn't, you know, a smart team be giving up top prospects for a guy like him? Because what he's done so far, Alex, it's been unreal. A new guy that just burst on the scene that I know we covered a little bit in the preseason, but Cole Ragans for the Royals. The Royals, Alex, have been. This rotation has just been stupid so far.
They're rolling.
I mean, Seth Lugo is putting together
ace
type numbers. And again, it's just so far, I've been a big fan of what the Royals are doing. They know they're really not truly in it to win it this year. They're building up for the future. And as a fan, you got to be pretty excited. Last year, you know, like you mentioned, we covered it. They sign Aroldis Chapman. They trade him to the Rangers for Cole Ragans. And look what's happening now. You got years and years of control for a good starting pitcher. It's probably your ace next season. And you got guys like Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo that you're hoping could at least have a good first half or have a good season that you could look to trade. I mean, right now, Alex, I mean, if you're the Royals, I know there's another year on contract of Seth Lugo, but you almost be wondering if come, you know, late July, are you looking and you calling teams to say, hey, you can have them right now to have this season and all of next year on your roster? And I feel like teams would give up a good prospect to the Royals to have a particular ace on their rotation. So it's a fun way we're watching that the Royals are doing. They're getting some of these, you know, some of these pitchers and hidden gems and signing them for a year or two, and then they're trading them away for prospects. You wish that more teams would kind of adopt that style and spend the money in the offseason and get these guys where you could say, hey, he has a good 4 months, we can trade this guy for some prospects, and we can kind of trick teams into giving them their into giving them some of their high level prospects. But like I mentioned, going back to your question, I think Corbin Burnes has just been kind of the blueprint for the starting pitching community in the majors, and what he's done so far for the last 4 years since he won the Cy Young, it's all been just kind of consistent. And I mean, when you're consistently putting up a 2-something ERA, that to me just tells me that, you know, you're a true ace, and that it's nothing shocking that you're putting up these numbers. You know, like some guys will do it for a season and then they'll have a 4 year ERA or something like that. But I think I'll lean a little bit on Corbin Burnes for that. But like you mentioned, I mean, one name that I didn't even mention, but Zach Wheeler, that guy's been a dog since he signed with the Phillies, and in the postseason he competes. In the regular season he competes. I feel like nothing phases that guy.
Yeah, I think I might pick Wheeler right now, but it is really tough. There's just so many guys who, you know, there's a mixture of guys who are proven, like I would say Logan Webb, you mentioned Burnes, Zach Wheeler, and there's other guys who are kind of on the up and coming, and it's kind of hard to tell like how dominant can this guy remain. Can Scooble kind of hang with the rest in the Cy Young conversation till season's end? Travis, if you look at who the two best Fangraphs WAR for pitchers in all of baseball this season are Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford, two Boston starting pitchers who I think maybe a year or two ago people thought they might be relievers, like no one was really exactly sure what they'd become, and they're pitching awesome right now. Other guys who are pitching awesome, you know, George Kirby's ERA is not great, but he's striking a ton of guys and walking almost nobody. I mentioned Glass now already, but there's lots of guys who it's kind of like, okay, let's see what you got. Like, can you piece it together for a full year here and end up in this Cy Young conversation? We'll have to see. But I can already tell you, Travis, that whoever wins the Cy Young this year, I'm maybe it's too early, but I would expect it to be a surprise just because so many of the guys who are usually in the top of those lists are either hurt or coming out of the year a little slow. But you mentioned the Royals, and we'll go ahead and just kind of I'll follow your lead there for just a quick second, because the AL Central is so interesting right now. If you look at Fangraphs odds to make the playoffs, according to Fangraphs projections, they still have the Twins with the highest odds. The Twins are 14-13. So last time we took a look at this, they were in a bit of a hole. They've climbed out of the hole. They're above 500.
They played Anaheim, so, you know.
Good point. They padded their stats a bit. They came to SoCal, they padded their stats. They're back above 500, but they're still 4.5 back. The Guardians are 19-9 with almost a 50% chance to make the playoffs, according to Fangraphs. And the Tigers and the Royals are both just right there, 16-12 for the Tigers, 17-12 for the Royals. 33% and 27% chance to make the playoffs, respectively. So those are two teams, Travis, where it's like, how long can you kind of keep this going? Are we going to see a fall off in May and June, or is the young talent actually arriving right now? So I wanted to kind of take a look at that because it's just super, super fun in my mind to kind of see a division that it feels so up for grabs. And it feels like, you know, the Tigers and the Royals, they might actually smell a little blood.
Yeah.
With the Twins coming out slow, and the Guardians are also taking advantage of the Twins' slow start. Travis, a team that's not taking advantage is the 6-win White Sox, but we won't pile on them right now.
Yeah, that's another topic for another day, another episode, Alex. We could talk about that all day with what's going on in the South Side of Chicago. But yeah, it's fun to watch teams like the Royals and Tigers truly competing, and we're getting into May. What's cool to see is that, you know, if these guys are competitive and still in the race come middle of July, they have a lot of prospects to give up to get high caliber players that are ready to win right now. And that's the cool thing. And you can maybe see them make some early moves and hopefully get the fans excited that they are truly, truly pushing for a postseason run. I don't see both those teams kind of sticking around, of course, right, like till June or July. I think we always go back to even like last year's Pirates team that was incredibly hot at the end of, I think it was end of May. They were still cooking. They had like 30 wins, and they were one of like three teams to reach 30 wins in the NL. And it was amazing. But I think we all knew that the NL Central is going to be, won by either, Milwaukee or Chicago, or even, you know, the surging Cincinnati Reds. But yeah, it's fun to see. I'm not, I still believe in teams like Minnesota or Cleveland that are really going to kind of dominate this division in the end. But it's really fun to see what the Royals and what the Tigers are doing so far. Really shocked what the Tigers have done so far, because again, I truly did not have that much hope in them this season. I thought they would be probably around a 65 to 70 win team. They're looking like a true 500 team right now. And then the Royals again, 2 years ago, Alex, or might even been last year, we were talking about the Royals having just the worst rotation in the bigs, and just how it's been just totally turned around this year. They have one of, if not the best rotation in the bigs. I mean, everyone besides Michael Wacha has an ERA below a four, which is absolutely fantastic. I think last year they had no one with an ERA below a four. Everyone was either a four or a five or a six. And it was really concerning. Brady Singer, we talked about, Alex, that was one guy that you highlighted years ago and said, you know, watch out for this guy. He had just not put it together for a number of years, but it just seems like we're seeing that breakout again this year from him. Yeah, he is a little old. He's 27, but it's at least good to see that you're seeing him kind of get back to what we all thought he could be coming out of college, out of Florida, and having a 2.62 ERA to start the year is truly awesome to see. But it's crazy.
Yeah, the staff's fun. At least so far, a lot of guys are doing well. And then, Bobby Witt is gonna be a guy who gets MVP votes. Vinny Pascantino, young and up and coming bat. The average is low right now, but he's doing a lot of things well at the moment. Salvi started the season hot. I don't expect that 340 batting average will last too long.
No. You expect that, AJ. Come on.
Am I mistaken? Is he gonna?
You look at it. Look at on base. Look at that 398 on base, man. That is something else right there.
We'll see how long he can keep up that kind of pace. And then other young guys who I think are due for some positive regression throughout the season. MJ Melendez, Michael Garcia. There's fun names on the team.
God, so, Hunter Renfro, I'm looking right now and I'm like, this is not surprising.
Giving Hunter Renfro a contract, I think, for them was not a bad idea. To try to flip
true.
Maybe he has a hot month, flip him at the deadline. That has not been the case so far for him whatsoever. Travis, another team and kind of division I wanted to look at, talking about their odds for the postseason and how things have changed recently. The Astros, Travis, what is going on in Houston? Houston, we have a problem, they like to say. Yeah.
Which we don't really say in the baseball terms. I mean,
normally
it's
not.
It's typically Houston Rockets or a couple years ago, Houston Texans. But for now, for baseball terms, we haven't said that in probably a decade. But yeah,
and
it's crazy.
We're looking right now, a 9-19 record, somehow below the Angels and the Athletics. Who would have thought that's where we'd be at come end of April? Currently, still have, according to Fangraphs, a 49% chance to make the playoffs, but they are now behind the Mariners in terms of odds. Mariners are only 15-13. Rangers are 15-14. So neither of those teams, nor the Angels or Athletics, are able to really build a substantial cushion above the Astros. Astros are 6 games back. I think if one of those teams started out hot, it could be like a 10 games back situation, but it's not there yet. And because of that, it feels like maybe the Astros might have some life with many months to go in the season. But 9-19, Travis, is, it's hard to even kind of try to rationalize knowing how good and consistent the team has been. And their offense is still good at the moment, but the pitching has just been a kind of a disaster. And there's a lot of injuries there, but every team has pitching injuries, it seems like, at the moment. So where are you at with the Astros? At what point do you write them off for being like a top contender this season? Are you already kind of saying, you know, this is just not their year and they should try to reboot? Should they try to, you know, obviously we'll wait till the deadline to determine sellers or buyers, but like there's a chance here maybe they should just kind of try to turn in some of their stuff and, you know, maybe trade Verlander and get a young pitcher back or with more control and try to retool. But where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably say I'd give it one more month, and if they do not turn it around, I think it's truly hit the panic button right now. I mean, teams have had really rough starts before and have really turned the ship around before in history. So, again, It's crazy enough, Alex, looking at the offense. If I would have showed you some of these, if I would have showed you their lineup and these OPS pluses, I mean, Yainer Diaz, a 125 OPS plus, that's excellent. Jose Altuve, a 191 OPS plus, that's excellent. Yeah, that's beyond excellent. That's incredible. Jeremy Pena, a 134 OPS plus. I mean, this is a guy, Alex, that really had a down year last year after that that great postseason that he had a couple years back. And then Jake Myers, a 111 OPS plus. That's great for a guy that's focused more on the defense. And then Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez, standard OPS pluses so far for them. Yordan does have a low slugging percentage. I am seeing right now he has a 495 slug, which he's typically a
low for his standards. Yeah,
550 slug or higher. But yeah, again, I'm not too worried about him. He's one of the best pure hitters on the planet. And then of course some of the guys on the bench again doing very good. Victor Caratini, Mauricio Dubon. I mean, these are guys that kind of just kind of expect these are the numbers you're going to get from these kind of bench players. But yeah, looking at the starting pitching, you always want to say to yourself, okay, if the hitting's doing really, you know, pretty decent, you know, what's truly the problem? And then you look at this starting rotation. I mean, you have Ronel Blanco, who I think it was his first two starts were like,
he was like no hits through like 18 six, innings.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a no hitter. And then it was like no hitting the Rangers in game two of his career, or not career, but for the season. For I think it was like six innings, and I mean again that's like 15 innings of no hit baseball to start the season. That's just incredible. But JP France has been awful. Christian Javier has been good. So again, another guy they can kind of rely on, but he's injured. Hunter Brown, one I think he was a high level prospect. Alex, he has been awful. Framber Valdez, he has been pretty good, but I think he dealt with, of course, with some injuries. And then a guy I'd never really even heard of, but Spencer Agaretti, awful. 10.2 innings pitched, basically an 11 ERA. So, yeah, they have, I think, like I mentioned, they have roughly about a month to really kind of turn this thing around, because, you know, we've seen teams not truly play their best in the American League West, but I think that will kind of take off. And you got a lot of hot teams in the wild card this year, Alex, especially the American League East. I mean, the American League East is looking at this and they're saying to themselves, you know, we're probably going to have at least three teams make the playoffs. And then of course the Central having one or two teams. The wild card spots are running out for the Texas Rangers right now. I know they think they want to win the division, or at least that's what they want to aim for, but you got to almost hope sometimes for, you know, maybe just banking on a wild card opportunity. And that might be the best they can be looking at pretty soon. I mean, right now it's crazy to see that there are four teams in the major leagues that do not have 10 wins, 10 or more wins. And the Astros are one of them. I mean, you would have never even thought that thinking in this season, but I'd say give it one more month. I think end of May, you can make a really good evaluation on them and say to yourself, okay, this team really needs to start hitting the panic button, or are they just going to kind of pack up shop and figure it out next year? But that's what I think right now. And I would say this, Alex, what do you say to this? Do you think that their manager, let me pick his name, Joe Espada, do you think he might be on the hot seat come July, August, they don't figure this out. I mean, this is a team that goes to the American League Championship Series every single year. And the one year that they get a new manager, other than Dusty and AJ Hinch, they are, you know, just one of the worst teams in the league. What do you make of that? Do you think he could be on the hot seat?
I'm not sure how they'll view him. I would think probably not, unless, you know, the guys calling the shots in terms of those types of hires are, maybe they have the opinion that, you know, Dusty was like leading the way and maybe the team's missing his leadership. I don't feel that way. I feel like I can't really blame the coach at all for what's happening. I think a lot of the issues come with the change. Ever since the guard was kind of changed with the new GM and AJ Hinch leaving, I think that the decision-making process for the organization got a bit worse. Like, I think one key example of that is going for Jose Abreu, giving him his contract. I mean, it doesn't have the length of like a Rendon contract or others, but in terms of just like dollars per year based on how you're playing, like, can't get that much worse than what Abreu is doing to start this season. And he wasn't very good last year either for them. And that's just a good example in my mind of like, not spending your money wisely. I feel like the Astros of 2018, 2019 would not have paid Jose Abreu what they're paying him and kind of locked up an older first baseman to replace your other old first baseman. So there's just a lot of questionable things with the decision making of the team, and maybe I would have spent the money differently if I were them. The other consideration is, of course, the injured list is just full of their starting pitchers right now. Their offense has been totally fine, in my opinion, and it just comes down to the fact that they need to get some of their good pitchers back healthy. And I think that will come. It just matters if it comes kind of too little too late in the season, because, you know, they really missed it so far. And the guys who you've highlighted have not started the season well on the mound. So that's where I'm at. I don't think the coach can really do much about it. As far as I'm aware, I don't think that there's any, you know, thing they're missing from Dusty or anything that this new coach is doing that's obviously wrong. I mean, I think, like, you know, the day-to-day stuff, the hitting, a lot of the guys are doing, Altuve's doing pretty well, Tucker's doing well. Like you said, Yordan a little slow to the start. We talked about Bregman earlier, but, you know, these are veterans who I know will kind of bounce back at some point. So I think it'll be a matter of time with them to kind of get back on track. But for me, it's almost just like, 9-19, like, did you dig too big of a hole from yourself? Yeah. I'm starting to think maybe they're getting to that point, but we'll see. Of course, they're a team capable of getting hot and figuring things out, but I think almost every Astros fan is saying, could like nightmare start to the season. Just absolute, like, couldn't be much worse than our wildest dreams. But Travis, that is all I really have today. One quick bit of breaking news: home run Joe Adell.
I saw that. I was going to say home run Joe Adell, and also
blow up star Chris Griffin Canning. Is that what you're going to say?
Oh, that, I mean, yeah. Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Another guy to highlight that we talked about, two run single, Alec Bohm.
Oh, wow.
So both of our guys in the first inning, Phillies and Angels are playing each other this week, Monday through Wednesday, and both guys having first inning success. So it's fun to see that we both highlighted on both guys and they both start the game off hot. So
a funny thing to look at here, Travis. This is just like, it's just classic Angels. It's just a very funny first inning.
I could say everything's classic Angels.
It's kind of classic Angels, classic Phillies as well. Phillies against Griffin Canning started the top of the first with a Schwarber single, Trey Turner hit by pitch, Harper walk, Bohm single, two run score, Marsack fly, another run scores, Castellanos double play. So I thought that was funny.
That is true.
And then the Angels go up for their at bats, Trout ground out, Adell homer, Ward ground out, Drury ground out. So it's just tough, it's just not it's just all, we're just gonna leave the Angels.
I'll say this too. I looked at that lineup, Alex, and I thought to myself, I don't understand Trout lead off, Adell second. I
think that if
those are two just big power hitting guys, I just don't know why they're batting that far up. And I feel like you want guys to get on base for them. But I don't know who's going to get on base, because we don't really have guys like that right now. So
my biggest thing is I feel like sometimes Washington will not know exactly how to get the offense out of a funk and will just kind of mix guys around. He said going into the season that Trout was going to be the third hitter. I had a problem with that because he was batting just inferior hitters at the top of the order. Yep. Then he moved Trout up to second with Ward behind him at third. I liked that a lot. I thought that was a good spot for us. And then that team started to slump a bit with that batting order, and he started moving Trout to leadoff. And I wouldn't hate that by itself, but he was doing Trout leadoff. He kept Ward at third, and he was putting like Shanuel and Neto batting second, and that didn't make much sense to me. Yeah. That's not really good protection for Trout. They can probably pitch around Trout a bit more with that configuration. But of course, as I said, that Trout hit a leadoff home run the first time he batted leadoff in a decade. So all that being said, Travis, we'll keep the Angels on the back burner, and hopefully we have better things to talk about in regards to that team in the near future. But that's all I have for this week. If you guys made it this far, we appreciate you so much, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Presented by Tool Tools Podcast.